If you've been attracting the same experiences over and over again, feeling stuck in your love life and uncertain about what steps to take, or you simply want specific steps so that you can start to transform your love life today and attract better partners, then a 90-minute courtship loop session is for you. Hi, my name is Zara J. I'm the founder of Captivating Courtship, the Captivating Courtship Coach Success Process, and the 8 Love Loop Relationship Patterns. I use a combination of my natural gifts to read relationship patterns, psychology, spirituality, and matchmaking techniques to provide you with deeper insight and tools to transform your relationship patterns, get back to who you are, and attract unlimited love. One way that I help you with this is through uncovering your courtship loops. Courtship loops are the blind spots in the links between your dating and relationship experiences that reveal the deeper story and connection to your love blocks. It's my intuitive process to help you bring clarity and guide you with specific steps on how you can change your love life right now. When you get clear on your blind spots, you will have the confidence and a roadmap on where you need to stop shrinking and settling so that you can elevate your expectations, set bolder boundaries, and develop unshakable self-worth to have the love you deserve. In this 90-minute session, you will be guided through the courtship loop process to uncover your unique relationship and courtship patterns and have an intimate look at how you can have more ease and flow to attract more enjoyable relationship experiences specific to your journey to love. You will walk away with a simple plan of action specific to you to help you navigate your love life for the next 6 months. This is a limited time offer with only 3 spots open every week to book a private courtship loop session. To secure your session today, go to the link in the show notes. Hey, I'm Zara J, relationship coach, author, and creator of the Passion Attraction Prototypes. And on this podcast, I teach high-achieving women like you how to break relationship patterns and create a match game plan so you can quickly identify and attract a compatible partner for commitment in less time using my 6-step formula, the Captivating Courtship Code. Every week, I bring you lessons, reflections, and love-changing tips that have been proven to help my clients meet their partners and transform their love lives quickly. You're getting the inside scoop from my years of owning a matchmaking service and as an expert relationship coach that will take you from a wounded princess to a captivating queen of courtship. So, if you're ready to ditch trying to get him to commit, which are just anxiety-creating relationship tactics, and instead learn authentic yet intentional, proven relationship attraction techniques so you can finally have the partnership you desire, you're in the right place. Welcome to the Courtship Code Podcast. So welcome to today's episode of the Courtship Code Podcast. And this is a special episode because we have a guest today to share with us a lot of information and tips and her expertise around balancing life, stress, nervous system regulation. And we're also going to be helping you to understand, especially as busy professionals, how you can use some of these tools and techniques and this information to create more balance in your personal life, in your love life, and during the dating and relationship process. So I wanted to bring this guest, I wanted to bring Miss Meredith Segan Saracen to the podcast because so many of the women that I work with, they are anxiously attached, or sometimes they're avoidantly attached as well. But we do primarily work with a lot of anxiously attached women. And when they don't get a phone call when they want it, or they have all this anxiety and overthinking during the dating courtship process, their nervous system goes into complete overdrive, overfunctioning, or shutting down, or just spiraling thoughts. So helping you, if you're a listener and you experience some of these things and some of the things we'll be talking about today, helping you to understand how to reel it back in, how to create more balance, how to self-soothe in this process, I think will be so beneficial to you so that you can feel more empowered, you can feel more confident and more at peace when it comes to navigating relationships along with stress and work-life balance. So thank you so much, Meredith, for joining us today. So I'm going to let you share a little bit of your background, what Inner Compass Health is, how you got started, and why it's important to have a better relationship with your nervous system.
Thank you, Sarah. Really happy to be here. So yes, I am a certified health and life coach. And I always like to say, like, this was not plan A.
For me, I understand.
I was an environmental lawyer. I was doing really impactful environmental litigation. I thought I had my dream job. And I was having horrible chronic migraines. I basically didn't have a pain-free day for something around 8 years. And I was struggling, but I thought that was my lot in life. And so I just pushed through. I got really good at pushing through. And I think a lot of us are really good at pushing through. Maybe it's not migraines, but it's something that we show up, we buck up, we push through. And finally, I did go on one medical leave shortly in 2013. I got well enough to go back to work. And then in 2019, I went back on medical leave for my migraines. And this time I really had this determination, not just to get better enough to go back to work, but to really find balance. I had this intuition that I wasn't broken, that I wasn't stuck with this experience for the rest of my life, that if I really made health my northern star, I could find balance in my system again, even though I had no idea what that meant. And so without going into too much detail, in that period of time, I learned a ton about the nervous system, about our brains, about the way our brains and our bodies experience stress. And I slowly was able to heal through that, and diet change and deeper belief work and emotional work. It was really quite a number of things together. But this piece about how our systems experience stress, how that impacts our health, how that impacts our capacity to show up as our best self, really stuck with me. And as I was getting better, I looked around and I saw so many people who may not have had chronic illness and may not be, you know, deep in this world of brain retraining and nervous system regulation. They didn't need that kind of life raft like some of us needed. But I was looking around at just other lawyers and other professionals and other women in my life. And I was thinking, gosh, maybe you don't have the same symptoms of a dysregulated nervous system as me, but people are stressed. People are burnt out. People are kind of like up to their necks in water trying to push through, and they could really use these tools, they could really use this work. And hey, wouldn't it be nice if they could do that before they experience life-altering illness or these deeper manifestations of chronic pain and chronic nervous system dysregulation? So that's how I decided not to go back to the law and become a coach and do this work. That's where Inner Compass Health came from.
Amazing. And I have a few things that I'm going to have to revisit with everything that you just broke down, because one of the things that you mentioned, the first thing that really stood out to me, you mentioned pushing through. And this concept of pushing through is very common when we want to parallel it with the relationship world and dating, because I instantly recalled a conversation years ago, back when I was doing matchmaking. Don't do that anymore. But back when I was doing matchmaking, I had an old client who, she had gotten engaged. After some time of, she was like single for a while. She was living in a foreign country. So just her belief in being able to attract a partner was already very low. And then she finally attracted a partner. They went through like the courtship process and they got engaged, and then he ended up calling off the engagement. And within, let's say, about a few weeks after the engagement, we had a meeting, and or after the engagement was called off, we had a meeting, and she says to me, "I'm ready for you to introduce me to someone." And I'm like, "Whoa, wait a second. Like, you just went through a major traumatic experience in your love life." And I think sometimes when we think about trauma in relationships, we often think about maybe only childhood trauma or divorce or abuse in a very like blatant type of way. But we don't often look at just those disappointments, those negative experiences, the things that we encounter along the road of partnership or finding love, or even just developing a deeper relationship with our own self-love and compassion within self, when relationship to ourself. But all those traumatic experiences, those disappointments, that has a major impact on our brain, on our nervous system, on how we relate to others and how we relate to ourselves. So for her to go through this experience, which she instantly kind of shut down her emotions to not have to feel it, and wanted to just like push right through and go on to like, I just want to get back out here and just meet the next person. Like, I don't even want to think about it. And this was kind of the turning point for one of the turning points for me from transitioning from matchmaking into coaching and into starting to understand relationship patterns. Very similar. I went through my own personal journey, but then even very similar to your journey with having to learn about the brain and neuroscience and nervous system and all those things. But me being able to understand them in the context of people's relationship patterns and how they relate to themselves, relate to their romantic life, and even their personal relationships as well. But one of the things that she said that really stood out to me was, I can't afford to slow down and think about this. And the reason why she was saying that, she was, I think at this time, maybe in her mid to late 40s, she had been single for some time. She really, really wanted to get married. Like I said, she was in this foreign country, so she already felt very limited in her options. So for her, the idea of having to sit and process her emotions, her feelings, having to heal, having to take the time to sit in what she experienced, in her mind, this was time that she was losing from her ability to be able to get married in the future. And by the way, congratulations. I know you just got married recently. So congratulations to that while we're on this topic. Yes. But you know, this was like a big thing. And it was in that moment that it hit me just how many women just have adopted this very mule-like mindset of just having to keep pushing through. And it often may stem from childhood stuff, which maybe you've seen from your mothers or your other caretakers, and then you adopt this into the workforce. But then even how you show up in your romantic and your personal relationships often can have that just keep pushing, don't feel your feelings, don't think about it, just keep moving forward. And it's really not healthy, and it doesn't allow you to actually learn how to process your emotions and be able to create a healthier relationship with your heart, with your mindset, with how you're feeling overall. So I love that you brought up the whole topic of pushing through.
Yeah. Oh, that is so important, Zara. And that story, I think, is just so illustrative. I mean, I think that we get stuck in our culture. Like you said, we have a culture that very much kind of encourages us to push away our feelings, be like, quote unquote, adults about it, and mm-hmm. just buck up, right? Mm-hmm. Like, that's the word that I get in my head sometimes, just buck up.
Right.
And there's kind of this false dichotomy that either we're lost in our emotions and we're kind of weak and unright, like we're seen as just like being lost in the sea of emotions and not very competent and complaining and, you know, maybe even lazy, or we're just pushing our emotions down. And this third way that you talk about, which is actually meeting our emotions and healing and working with ourselves, is really important for all human beings, whether you're anxiously attached or not. I skew anxiously attached. So that capacity to like actually show up and be like, oh, this is what I'm experiencing. And it makes sense, especially because of my own history and my own story, and that tending to myself before I move forward was a critical part of my journey and is part of why I named my coaching practice Inner Compass Health, which is to say, we're not just moving forward. You know, though I work with people, and I know you work with people who love to move forward and get things done, we're actually pausing to check in to establish connection with ourselves and making sure that we're moving forward in this aligned, healed way. And that's when we get the things that we want to get. And that's when we're experiencing things the way we want to be experiencing them.
Right, right. So true. Something else that you mentioned as far as pushing through is that you mentioned being up to your head in stress. And when you were expressing this and you talked about being up to your head in stress and having to just balance life and work and all those things, what came to my mind was being up to your head in stress in life and not being able to balance that, not being able to navigate those emotions. And then what I see oftentimes in the relationship world is that stress and that inability to self-regulate, then gets projected onto relationships and into the dating and courtship process. So let's say you have a client who is getting to know someone and they're building a relationship, but they have a lot going on in their personal life. Maybe their personal life isn't as balanced. Maybe they have some codependency. They have a difficult time focusing on themselves, prioritizing themselves. Maybe they're just very stressed out at work. And all that attention and all that energy then gets projected onto the relationship, onto the partner, and they don't know how to reel it back in. They don't know how to self-prioritize, how to focus back on themselves, how to regulate their emotions. They may get really excited. Maybe they're overwhelmed with the potential of the relationship and where things may go, and they're super excited about the relationship, and now they have all these spiraling thoughts and their attachment style kicks in. Or maybe they're overwhelmed by the vulnerability and the intimacy, so they go into shutting down or pushing someone away. So there's so many ways that stress, whether it's external stress or internal stress, shows up in relationships and has a major impact on the outcome of a relationship or what goes on in a relationship. And I like to focus on relationship patterns because with my, I have these 8 signature relationship patterns that I help people to understand and be able to kind of identify their archetype and how it shows up. But that stress and how it shows up and how they react and their typical behaviors in response to that really can make or break relationships. And you're very fortunate if you find someone that's willing to be patient and kind of work with you and you're working with them. And like, that's really when you know that you found your person, because they're willing to solve problems with you and understand how you, you know, cope, how you deal with things. But it's a lot. It can, one, you may have to kiss a lot of frogs to get to that point. And then two, I think when it comes to relationships, people don't often have that level of accountability to even realize how their triggers and their stress behaviors and their inability to self-regulate is impacting their ability to date or to build a healthy relationship, or just even once in the relationship, how to sustain it.
Zara, I really appreciate you just normalizing like what you just said, the person who's like actually willing to do the work with you.
Yeah.
Because I know that like we hear, like there's this thing that people like to say, like, oh, when it's right, it's just easy. And like, yes, in certain ways, it's easy. But also, it's actually not easy to take two people who deal with things very different, have different emotional demeanors and ways of coping, and then you put them together and they're each other's partner. That actually does take a lot of work. And I just appreciate you kind of normalizing that that is part of growing mm-hmm. a healthy partnership. And the way that I think about some of this that has just really supported me is that I'm constantly working on building my resilience in every single part of my life. Because when I am a resilient person, when I have a resilient nervous system, when I am attuned to the thoughts and the stories that I am telling, then I get to show up as my best self in every single aspect in my life. And I can just say, me and my partner, when we were, you know, dealing with exactly what you're talking about, the place where we were coming up against very different ways of dealing with difficult things, there was this really important kind of moment where I turned to him and I said, look, I think each of us have things we need to work on. And these are things that we need to work on for our own self-actualization, our own growth. We could leave this relationship and go to the next relationship. You and me, we are both going to be facing the same thing. So what if we actually started working on this, not to save our relationship, but just because we both want to be our best selves, and then see what happens in our relationship, right? Absolutely. And that was this really opening moment of being like, there's nothing wrong with me. There's nothing wrong with you, but we have growth. And what if we just focus on growth here together and then see what happens? And it was quite helpful, actually.
No, you know, absolutely.
And both done that.
100%. And I have talked in the past about people overly romanticizing healing when it comes to relationships. But one thing that you just mentioned is really important, that you both saw that you as individuals needed to do the work. And I think that what happens in these relationships, especially when you're not securely attached, which I know most of the people listening to this will not be securely attached, or else they're not listening to this podcast. And so if you have more of an insecure attachment style, And when you get into, and this is the stuff that people don't talk about. Like, I just feel like, especially with social media, the idea of relationships or dating or any of that has been super romanticized and very surface level. And it often stops at maybe just meeting a person or that's it. But no one talks about what happens once you are actually in the process of building the relationship. And what I have experienced and what I have also seen so many others experience, when you are actually in a place, one, you have that level of self-awareness and you have that desire to be better, but then you also, you've met someone and you realize that this person is a mirror right now. Like, they're showing me parts of myself that I thought I worked on, that I thought that I had under control, that I thought that I had to grow. And you're also serving as a mirror to that other person. But that is like the beauty of a relationship. You're going to get stretched. You're going to get pushed in a way that you cannot experience on your own. You're not going to experience an individual. You need that other person. And I always say relationships is the one area of life where you cannot point the finger at someone else, because you have to look at yourself. Where other areas of life, you can say, there's like other areas of life, there's no, oh, I'm sorry, I may have worded that incorrectly. Relationships are the only area of life where you can blame someone else and you don't have to look at yourself. Where you can always say, well, it was that person, or they did this, or they said this, or they gave up, or it's always a finger able to be pointed. Unlike with health or finances or other things, you have to take self accountability. I spent too much money. I eat too much. I don't work out. I don't, like, there's more of the I, but in relationships, there's always the you, right? It's so easy to say you. So when you get to that level of self-awareness and a willingness to be accountable, what I often see, and I have also experienced, when you get to that point and you get into the relationship, you will get to that halt moment oftentimes of like, whoa, how we're handling conflict, how we're dealing with each other, where things are, like, there's some work that needs to be done. And I want to encourage anyone that's listening to this to not run from that experience, to not run from that moment. It doesn't mean you have to be in a toxic or narcissistic or unhealthy relationship. It doesn't mean tolerate abuse, but it does mean to kind of push a little bit of that fairy tale aside that you may have been sold in Disney movies or in the media, or maybe even through your family or your community, and realize that there's work that you're going to have to do on yourself. Your partner's going to have to do work too, as individuals. And then it's also like the relationship is the work in between. But it's a beautiful thing. And if you are willing and you find someone who's also willing to do it as well, and this may not be an overnight thing, it's a process. It takes time. But as you start to do that, you will grow and you will learn so much more. And that's where vulnerability and connection truly does exist. Now, one of the things that you mentioned, and I want you to definitely go more into this, you mentioned the stories that we tell ourselves. And
yeah,
us learning to, one, own our story from like our past experiences, like fully own our path and realize, like, you've been through some things, you've had some reasons why you are how you are. You can fully own that, integrate those shadows and those aspects into yourself. But then also being more consciously aware of the stories that you're telling yourself in your head about why things are happening, why things aren't happening, like all the different beliefs and how that impacts your nervous system and what you're experiencing.
Yeah, so this is so important. And I think for most of us, we grow up thinking that there's actually no difference between our thoughts and who we are. Mm. Like, what we think is who we are. If I think it, then it's true. It is me. And for me, just this learning alone, that my thoughts are just a thing that happens inside me. Actually, we have systems that we learn so much as little kids, right? We take in so much of the world. And then these kind of ways of thinking are coupled together in our brain. So in our brain, neurons that fire together wire together, which means that our brain is associational. When that's why Pavlov was able to like ring a bell and the dogs would salivate, because he had created that association between ringing the bell and feeding the dogs. Well, our thoughts actually kind of work that way too, where there's a stimulus and then there's a thought response. And that thought response is literally just like the dog salivating. It's just happening in our brain. And we, meaning the people that actually hear the thought, notice the thought, the part of us that observes the thoughts that are happening, gets to decide hey, is that true? And I think that's like a really powerful question that we get to ask. That question, like, I even this morning, I had this moment where I was telling the story about how I was feeling hurt by something my partner did. And I just paused for a second and I was just like, is this even true? Like, am I actually hurt? Like, do we need to have a conversation about this? And when I stepped back, I was able to realize, you know what? We don't even have an agreement on this. Mm-hmm. Like, we haven't even decided what our roles are in this new thing that we're doing together. So instead of like coming to him angry and hurt, I could just come to him and be like, hey, how are we going to handle this? Like, what's our agreement here? And that's like the power of stepping away from our thoughts, of asking if it's true. First of all, it's just a huge relief once we realize that our thoughts are not us, because then we're not so captive by the fact that they're still running even when we don't subscribe to that story. Like, the thoughts can keep going and we get to show up with self-awareness and decide, one, is that true? Two, how do I want to respond to this? Mm-hmm. And I'm kind of going all over the place, but I want to pause for a second because you said self-awareness, and something I always like to say is we can't have self-awareness without compassion, right? Which is to say, it's not super helpful if the anxiety loops are going on or the hurt loops are going on, because I'm very sensitive. I can get hurt very easily. And it's not very helpful if what I do is I'm like, this isn't true. And then I beat myself up about it, right? Because what am I doing? I'm just staying in that yucky, upset, activated space, right? It just, it's keeping me locked in that space. And so when we couple awareness, which is, oh yeah, like there's this feeling I'm having about the way that just happened. There's a story I'm telling. Is that true? And then I get to say, okay, here's like the compassion, which is to say, oh yeah, it did feel bad when he didn't do X, Y, or Z. And I really want that. And I can give myself that kind of care and love that I'm really wanting, but then I can make a different choice. Yeah. And that's the power that we get to create when we separate from our thoughts. And when we bring both self-awareness and compassion, is we open up this capacity to make a better choice.
Yeah, I love that. I love that. And when you talk about stimulus and response, oftentimes the problem that happens, whether it's in interpersonal relationships or even just the relationship with yourself, will be an inability to communicate what's going on. And I'm a big fan of Ayala Van Zandt. And I remember on an interview she did years ago, she said that most adults have basically like an elementary, almost equivalent to maybe a 6 or 7 year old's ability to actually communicate their emotions and their feelings. And even when you mentioned what you're experiencing today, and one, bringing that level of awareness and compassion to yourself to even ask you the question, but then also the willingness and ability to communicate, that is a big thing. That is a major challenge for so many women that I work with. I know this is a skill set that I'm still learning. I'm still working on how to better communicate when I am feeling stimulated, activated, triggered, any of those things. Because for me, my reaction, my natural response, just from like my anxious style, is to like lean in. Like, I go straight into like activated, ready to like, what happened? Why did this? Like, lean in, right? And typically, we're attracted to people who will shut down or move away, right? That's like that anxious avoidant trap. But I also have clients who they tend to either lean in and get super emotional, super activated, and their communication response is very reactive. Or I have my clients who they shut down and they withdraw. And it's so interesting because for those who shut down and withdraw, they see that as actually like a good thing, a safe thing, because they're not being reactive and they're not leaning forward, but they're also not communicating their emotions, what they're experiencing, what they're feeling. They just go into protective shutdown mode. While my other clients, my more anxious clients, they feel like their ability to maybe over communicate or over express or just react, that is a good thing, because at least they're saying how they feel, but it's how they're communicating is ineffective. So I wanted to ask you, just kind of touch on, what are some ways that we can start to practice and become stronger when it comes to communication when activated, whether you're shutting down in your activation, you're more avoidant, or if you're anxious and you tend to lean in, how do we start to develop more tools when it comes to communication when we're in that state of stress?
Yeah, that's such a great question, Zara. And I think, like, put simply, as much as possible, we will be better off by not trying to communicate when we're activated. Ooh. Like, that is actually just not the best time to communicate. So fun fact, our brain has, like, these evolutionarily older parts of our brain, our limbic system. That's the part of our brain that's kind of scanning the environment for danger. It's the part that when there is danger, is kind of, it's like where that fear, that emotional response is being sent out from. And it's not as evolved as our frontal cortex, which is like the newer part of our brain, the human part of our brain. That's where higher level reasoning happens. That's where compassion and empathy and all these beautiful things that humans can do, that's where that happens. When we get triggered, when we get activated, our bodies, our brains are designed to actually make us more reactive. Because if it's a life and death situation, if there is a bear in front of me, I don't have time to be like, well, like, how was the bear's childhood? Right. Like, is this an old pattern for the bear? Like, I don't have time for that. I need to be like, am I going to run? Am I going to, you know, hide? Am I going to play dead? And that's happening at the subconscious level. That's happening so fast. It's happening before we even know consciously that it's happening, right? So actually, there is about 1 second delay between our limbic system getting information that something's not safe and our frontal cortex consciously telling us, hey, there's something not safe.
Just super quick.
Super quick. So there's this, but that second is really important, because within that 1 second lag, that part of our brain is already sending messages to our system to prepare us to fight, flight, freeze, fawn, right? It's already setting in motion that activation. And I always like to point out, like, have you ever been so stressed, Zara? And, like, listeners, I'm sure you've experienced this. You're so stressed out. You're so upset in an argument. Like, you feel stupid. Like, you feel like your brain is not, it's not working. Like,
can't
that's,
think,
that's actually,
right.
That's actually evidence of that intense arousal state or activation state, because our brain is protecting us by bringing us into that more reactive state.
Hmm.
It's not the best place to have a difficult conversation. We're not very empathetic. We don't have all our resources online. Like, you know, children that have less developed brains, like, with the way they can be, it's like, we kind of behave that way because right. That's actually what our brain is doing. So I would say the first thing, and Doctors Gottman talk about, like, taking the pause, right? This is why that's so important. Because when we're in that activated state, it's going to be so much harder to show up in our highest and best way. And like you said, like, most of us have a go-to strategy. I'm with you, Zara. Like, I get something hurts me. Like, I want to walk in the door, throw open the door, and, like, tell you how it is and tell you how you hurt me. And that really does not work well for my partner. But it also is not working well for me. And so something that I always like to bring into my work is kind of taking away the shame from that reaction to understand we're going to keep doing our best strategy until we have a better strategy. Mm. Right. And so that reactive strategy is like our brain's primary protective strategy, but it's not working for us. So we have to come up with a better strategy to meet that. And that part of us that really needs to be seen and heard and is hurt. And, like, for me, that energy, like, I feel it come up to my head, like, it has to go somewhere.
Right.
I'm not helping anyone by containing it. But it does not need to go to my partner.
Right.
And so I think one of the pieces that's really, really supportive in terms of kind of regulating ourselves before we try to communicate is starting to relate to ourselves
mm.
in a way that is really unfamiliar for most of us. And for me, that I've done a fair amount of parts work. So okay. parts work would kind of encourage you to think of that reactivity as like a part of us.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's like the grown-up adult part of us. And I get to meet myself. And so that might look like saying like, hey, what's going on here inside me? And I might even do this out loud sometimes because it's helpful to do it out loud. I can also do it in my head, but I might just get on my shoes, go for a walk. I might not, if I'm walking outside, I probably won't do it out loud because I'll look unwell. But just like, what's going on? Like, oh, I'm feeling this feeling, right? Naming the feeling. So interesting fact, when we name the feeling, we're actually bringing ourselves back into that frontal cortex. The naming of the feeling is just something that helps bring us back into that more conscious mind. So once we've named the feeling, then we get to understand it's like it's a messenger. And then we get to think about, okay, what are the story and the thoughts associated with that feeling? What's the outcome that like we're looking for? And then we actually at this point have brought some of our faculties back online enough to start to think about, okay, what's the strategy that gets me there? And I'm saying that as if that can all happen in 1 minute. And like, I think that amount of time that takes is going to depend on the level of activation. Like the thing this morning just kind of was like a little bit of like a prick. Ooh, I didn't like that feeling. It wasn't a big, but if it's a big thing, if it's a thing that really creates a lot of reactivity, then before I can do any of that, I just need to get my system back online. And so in terms of simple tools, simple things that you can do, one of the things that I love to talk about is like our bodies, one of the natural ways that we have to work through like an arousal state, an activated state, a triggered state, whatever you like to call it. I don't know what you tend to use, like Zara, in your program or with your clients. Is there like a term you like to use?
No, I don't
for
have
that?
Any particular term. You're good with okay. activated.
So when you're activated, right? So out in the wild, there's like a gazelle that's running from a lion, and it like darts away and the lion misses it. Like, and you'll watch the documentary and the gazelle will like shake.
Hmm.
It'll like go through this shake. Or like, you know, children when they've been in like a traumatic event, right? Or people, you know, you see them outside in the movies, like, and they're kind of shaking, right? That's this instinctive response that our nervous system does to like pulse out all that energy, all that adrenaline that we just created in order to fight whatever the threat was. Because by the way, our brains, for better or for worse, only have one type of stress response. Like it sends out the same chemicals, whether you're being chased by a bear or the guy hasn't returned your text messages. And those same chemicals are designed to fight, to run, to flee. Like it's actually sending the blood to your arms and legs so you can run or fight, which is super unhelpful. If it's like a text message conversation issue, because you don't need to fight, you don't need to flee, but your body's doing the same thing. It has like this one thing that it does. So knowing that shaking really helps, I encourage clients to shake. And that can literally just look like shaking our arms and legs. It can also mean putting on a song and just dancing and shaking around the room. it's amazing. And clients love it. I have a lot of folks who do that just every day. At some point in the day to like just release the stress of our day, because you know, we wake up, maybe we're running late, we get into traffic, maybe our boss is mad at us, you know, like all these little stressors throughout our day, they do kind of start to pile up in our body. And so if we have a practice of just shaking it out, of going for a run, of dancing it off, it's just helpful to kind of bring back our baseline to a better baseline in our body.
Yeah, like movement.
So any kind of
any type of movement, walking too, right?
Walking too, any kind of movement. Yeah. It can be exercise. It can be running. It can be walking. It can be, the thing I like about the shaking is that you can do that in like 1 or 2 minutes, right? Like you can really just move it out of your body quite fast. But yes, any sort of movement is going to be helpful. The exception to that, I would say, is that for some folks who skew anxious or skew activated, certain workouts like a HIIT workout can kind of create that like intensity state. So it just inner compass health again here, notice what works for you. And I really encourage folks to have like an experimental mindset here. So just try out dancing, try out shaking, try out, I'm just going to walk around the block and come back and see if I feel better. What movement actually helps you return to center, and what works for you. So one, movement, super wonderful. Two is having some sort of positive interaction. So that stress response, part of how it kind of comes back down, part of how we complete that stress response is by getting a cue of safety, right? So there's so many ways to create cues of safety. We can do that in a way that's called bottom up, which means having our body giving us a cue of safety that goes to our mind by breathing.
Like breath work.
So every breath work, yes. So every time we exhale, we're actually just slightly activating that parasympathetic response, that rest, digest, and heal response. So breaths that have longer exhales are really calming for our system. So you can do a breath that is, you know, four counts on the inhale and then six or eight counts on the exhale. And first of all, that slows us down. And that slowing down, like that's sending a signal to our body that we're safe, because you don't slow down when you aren't safe, right? Side note, this is why rushing is so bad for our systems, because we're telling our systems we don't have enough time and we're activating that stress response. Okay, so movement, but also things that give you cues of safety. That can be the breathing, the bottom-up cue of safety. It can also be something like turning on TikTok and watching dancing or watching a comedy video, something like that. Like laughter is also sending that cue to our body that things are safe, right? So just, you know, something quick like a cat video, any of those things are kind of sending those signals of safety to our brain. I don't actually recommend going on social media because that scrolling.
I was going to say that as soon as you mentioned TikTok, my mind went to, well, that can activate stress for me.
Yeah,
that's such a problem.
Don't go to, so yes, scrolling, not helpful, but maybe just pulling up like a 1-3 minute video
on YouTube of a comedian that or
you like. Yeah.
Yeah, something that can.
Exactly. So just moving your energy over or getting that cue of safety from a friend. Right. And I think this requires some discernment, because there's those friends that we call and they're like, oh, he's such an asshole. He like him or her, they, right. Who like wants to get on your side and blame the other person. Like, that's not what I'm talking about. But the friend that you can call and be like, I'm just feeling, right. Naming the feeling and getting that support of a person who's like, I understand you. I see you. I validate you. That can also be a cue of safety.
Yeah.
But again, that takes discernment, because you do not want to call
and
that friend.
Just a shameless plug that can also be posting in the community and coming to coaching and bringing that to coaching or posting in the coaching community, so that you have a safe space with like-minded women who will be able to support you in that process. But 100%.
Amen. Yeah, go into thoughtful, curated spaces where you know you're going to get support.
Right.
Definitely.
Right.
So creating these things that help you, what is your cue of safety?
Yeah.
And again, I really encourage people to be both experimental and creative, because what works for one person might not be what works for another. And our job, this is no one else's job. Our job is to regulate ourselves.
Yeah.
Yes. Like co-regulation is real and we can go there, but our job is to figure out how we can do that so that then we can go communicate.
Right.
Because then we're going to be able to show up whole, our whole brains online, and be able to have that conversation with our own emotional responsibility, and with more of a problem-solving focus. And then maybe even also, you know, sharing those emotions, but sharing them from a place of speaking for them instead of speaking from them.
I like that. Speaking for them and not speaking from them. It's kind of like learning to advocate for your emotions as a part of yourself, but not necessarily letting those emotions be your whole being. So I really like the way you just framed that. Something yeah. that you mentioned was essentially like filling the void with choice. And that's kind of what you just broke down when you're in that activated state, learning how to regulate your nervous system, learning how to come back to self gives you that opportunity to make the choice on how you want to respond instead of always being in a reactive space. When it comes to work-life balance, because I know you work with a lot of professionals who they tend to have a lot of stress when it comes to life and just navigating the ups and downs, whether it's in the workplace or home or any of those things. What do you often see when it comes to professionals or just high achievers when it comes to their ability to respond? And really what I'm asking is, I think a lot of times those who are professionals or high achievers or intellectuals or just doers, the go-getters, it doesn't really matter where you stand in society, but those who tend to be very independent in how they navigate, I feel like they lack self-compassion, and also they can have a difficult time with even recognizing their inability to respond versus react. I think that they can have this shell, they have this persona, they have this image built up of themselves, sometimes a mask of themselves. So even being vulnerable in that space of realizing that maybe you do need some help, maybe you do need to slow down, maybe you do need to come back to yourself, I think that can be really difficult for them to even own, or for them to even, you know, admit to themselves that this is something that they're struggling with. So when you are working with these professionals or these doers of society, what do you see? It's often like some of the struggles that they have when it comes to either owning their story or owning their reactive behaviors. Do they tend to mask with confidence? Like, how do you see that show up oftentimes?
Yeah, that's such a great question. And I think there's a psychologist, Gabor Mate, who I cannot think of the exact quote, but he basically says, like, we're going to keep doing the thing we're doing until the pain becomes greater than the benefit, right? We're going to keep doing the strategy. Like, I really like to use this word strategy, because everything we do is a strategy, right, in a certain way. And our beautiful, powerful brains have found a way for us to operate in a very complex world without having to decide everything, right? Like, if I had to think about how to move my mouth in order to have this conversation with you, it would be a very slow conversation, Zara, right? So our brains have this capacity to take all of the things that we do over and over again and move them deeper into that subconscious brain and create habits. And that habit is how we operate through our day. Something like 60 to 70% of our behavior is habits, our thoughts, our subconscious. This is happening without choice. And this is good in the sense that that's necessary to function.
Right.
But this is where we get into trouble, because when we find some place where something's not working, that's when we have to be willing to start to unpack what that subconscious habitual strategy is and bring it to consciousness so that we can change it. And so what I find with my clients is they come to me when that pain is great enough that they're willing to start to look at it. Does that mean they want to look at it? No, it's very uncomfortable for everybody. And I've had a few clients lately who kind of say that. They're like, I'm working with 50-something professional men, CEOs of a bank, right? They've gotten really far in life without actually stopping and like digging into why they're doing what they're doing. And that is really uncomfortable. So I feel like there was kind of two pieces. And the second piece to what you're talking about is like, what are the things I see that they're doing? And you kind of touched on some of those, which is like perfectionism, self-criticism, comparison. These are thought habits right? They're habits, but they're habits of thought that a lot of high achievers are operating under. So perfectionism is this really beautiful self-protective strategy to prevent failure or rejection. That's the strategy. The strategy is, if I am perfect, then I will never fail and I will not be rejected. And that's a really common thought habit amongst my clients. I certainly am a recovering perfectionist. And I call that a beautiful strategy because I really bring that compassion to the self-protective nature of that strategy. Like, we're not being perfectionists because it's fun. Actually, it's deeply painful being a perfectionist because it's a false standard that no one can live up to. But it's this protective instinct. And so when we can bring our awareness and our compassion to that perfectionism, then we can start to open up capacity to choose a different thought habit, right? What are we going to replace that with? And that's something I work with my clients on, is not just uncovering these old patterns that aren't supporting us, but actually doing the work to honor them and honor the strategy with compassion, and then move into a new pattern that we're going to create and develop consciously.
Can I just jump in for a moment? I just wanted to add with that perfection. So I wanted to parallel this when it comes to relationships, because everything that you just mentioned, how it shows up in their work life and in those areas, it shows up the same. I always say, how you do things in one area shows up the same exact way in another area. So it's paralleled, and it trickles over right into their love life as well. So that perfectionism, or that overachieving, that doing, that overfunctioning, it shows up in two ways usually. It either shows up in their persona and how they perceive themselves. So it can allow certain clients to push people away because they have this idea of their own perfectionism, and no one else can meet them there. No one else deserves them. No one else has those same qualities. So it can act as a way for them to, if they're more avoidant, to push people away so that they can avoid connection and intimacy. And then on the other end, if they are more anxious, they tend to strive in relationships to be this perfect partner and this overachieving partner and this high achieving partner and this doer, where they feel as though they have to prove their worthiness or prove that they're good enough to be chosen or to be committed to. So those same things exist in that same way, the same way you mentioned, like, the self-criticism that shows up. And there was one more thing that you mentioned in regards to
comparison.
The comparison. Yes, the comparison. That is a big thing, especially I've been talking over the last week just in my email list and on the podcast about what I call the adapter love loop pattern. And for those who have that pattern, they tend to do a lot of comparison when it comes to what others have experienced in their love life, or what others have gone through, or how easy they perceive it was for other people. Or, you know, it could be social media, relationships, whatever, but they tend to compare themselves and others a lot and use that as a way to kind of beat themselves up or feel as though they're not good enough, they're not worthy, things aren't happening fast enough, whatever those stories are that they're telling themselves. So definitely wanted to just parallel that for the listeners with how this looks in your work life, but also how it shows up in the exact way in your relationships.
It's so beautiful. And those examples are so salient, Zara, because when we're stuck in those loops, it's really quite painful. Mm-hmm. Like, it's not pleasant to be comparing yourself all the time, but it feels necessary. Like, it feels like survival.
It feels like the solution to the problem.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And that's why I think it's so important to just bring to light that that's a strategy. Because then we open up the capacity that actually, okay, the solution isn't changing my external circumstances. The solution isn't me being perfect. The solution is actually picking a strategy that is more sustainable and pleasant to live in. And as we pick that new strategy, it's going to feel uncomfortable. It's going to feel unsafe. And we have to test it out slowly and safely to prove that it functions in the world. But going back to some of those examples you gave, because I think they're really good, what I would say is part of how we help ourselves with the self-awareness piece is noticing that pattern, right? So for example, I know that something I used to do at the end of a date was get in the car and then think about whatever I probably did wrong and then want to like text the person about it.
Oh, right? No.
Like, oh, sorry, I did that thing. You know what I'm saying? Like just that instinct to like get in the car. I'm not doing it consciously,
right?
But I get in the car and I'm replaying the night till I get to the thing that I did that was maybe, you know, maybe I was inconsiderate or maybe I should have offered to pay or who knows like what the thing was, you know, and then I want to reach out. Right. So anyways,
like,
just,
and then you go into that space of like kind of people pleasing and over apologizing for things that you don't even have to be apologetic for.
Right. So that's just an example of like a thing I like that over communication after hanging out with somebody to make up for a place I may have done something wrong. And that's just like an example of how I see that showing up in me. But what we can do and what these archetypes that you offer so beautifully do is help us see the pattern and then start to plan for it.
Right.
So that might look like I know that the most anxious part of a date for me is the car ride to the date and the car ride home from the date, right? Or if you walk or however you bike, good for you. But so then we get to be conscious in how we set ourselves up for success in those problem places. So if my drive home from the date is where I get activated, I'm going to create a plan.
Mm.
I'm going to create a plan. I'm going to set an intention. Maybe it looks like getting in the car and thinking about one thing I did well. A really solid antidote to anxiety is actually bringing our attention to gratitude and success.
Mm-hmm.
Because no matter how bad a date it went, you probably did one thing well.
Or you looked great.
Right? Like, or you looked great. Maybe you just looked great. You showed up. Maybe the date was a complete bomb, but you showed up. You looked good. So bringing attention to something we are grateful for, bringing attention to a success, and just shifting our thoughts to a different, like, basically what we're doing is we're breaking the pattern of getting our car seat, our brain sees the car at the end of the date. And what is it used to doing? We're playing the date to figure out what I did wrong. That's like the pattern. Okay, I'm going to pick a new association. When I get in the car at the end of the date, I get in the car and I think of one thing I did well. Or I immediately put on like a song that's like really happy. And I put it up loud to just break that pattern of going down that cycle. If we can recognize our loops, we can break our loops consciously.
Right. I love that. And as you were speaking, what also came to my mind was how great of a partner you will be when you have that level of awareness, because then you can also support someone else in that process. Because oftentimes, whether it's your romantic partner, it could be if you're a parent, it could be your child, it could be even in a workplace when it comes to like work relationships. Being able to hold that space for someone else who maybe lacks self-compassion or they default to negative self-talk or any of those things, and being able to also support someone else in that process is also really important to strengthen your relationships holistically, like all relationships. Being able to support and be a good support system and being able to connect with others because you can have that compassion for others because you have that level of compassion for yourself, and being able to recognize and have that level of awareness when those loops come up or when negative self-talk or that lack of self-compassion comes up, which often happens in relationships. Like I said, relationships in general, whether it's work relationships, family relationships, romantic relationships, when you encounter someone who really struggles with that or they're in that space, being able to hold space for someone else is also really important to be able to support someone else in their healing, but also for you to be able to strengthen your own healing within yourself as well, because you'll build your trust muscle because now you feel like, I have the tools. Wait, I know how to do this. I can recognize this. I understand when this comes up. And it helps you to really strengthen your trust within yourself as well.
Yes. Yes. Oh, I love that, because it's this work that we do for ourselves is actually helping us be better partners and friends and associates and all of those things. And the more that we're separating from our thought pattern loops and like taking everything as true that we think and feel, the more we can do that with our partners,
right,
the more we can be on to their loops. And so when our partner or person we're dating does the thing that they do, that's there, then all of a sudden I don't have to take it personally and make it about me.
Yeah.
An expression I love is Q-tip, quit taking it personally, right? To just be like, oh, this is how he copes or she copes, and it actually has nothing to do with me. And then I don't have to get caught in the spiral that brings us both down.
Yeah, I love that.
That's powerful.
I love that. It's very powerful. And even when you mention that, I'm thinking about even before becoming someone's partner, during the process of like partner selection, dating, getting to know someone, you're going to experience rejection, right? It's inevitable. It doesn't have to be or feel like rejection, but it can be perceived as rejection, right? I think that it's a blessing. It's just bringing you one step closer to what actually is available to you. It's a gift. You're going to learn a lesson through it, but you're going to experience that. And this is something that a lot of people that I work with have a very, very difficult time processing. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to lie. I still have to reel it in sometimes. It may not be in the relationship world, but when it comes to rejection in different areas of life, like how I feel when I feel like I'm not getting what I want. The inner girl in me is not getting what she wants, and it's not happening, and it's not happening fast enough. And all of those emotions, I came to the realization a few months ago, and just speaking of just a tool to use, like a strategy, something that I started doing when I felt activated and my emotions are higher, I start going to spiraling thoughts and I don't want to react in communication. What I've started training myself to do was to pull out my keep notes on my phone and say everything that I need to say in my keep notes and to put it there first. And at least I'm just getting it out, because maybe a pen and paper is not readily available, but at least if I can just text it to myself and my keep notes and just write out what I'm thinking or what I need to feel, that at least allows me to slow down some and come back into myself and actually look, and I can edit and change it around without ever having to actually press send or communicate it. But being able to process those negative emotions or whenever you're feeling rejected in any area of life is really important. And during the dating process, or you're getting to know different potential partners, you will experience what's perceived as rejection. And if you cannot self-regulate, if you go into a lot of negative thoughts and beliefs, or you're not good enough, or why is it never you? You're always the bridesmaid and never the bride. Well, why this person and only these types of women or these types of people get partners or get married or get chosen? And, you know, looking for all the reasons why it's not you or why it didn't work, and not being able to step back. I think being able to have that level of awareness, have that level of compassion, but also have some tools where you do have a deeper understanding that other people's choices, emotions is not necessarily about you. And yeah, being able to make some peace. It's not saying that you'll never feel upset or you'll never feel hurt or disappointed. Like, you're allowed to feel those feelings. We want you to feel those feelings. But also, you don't have to deeply internalize and personalize everything, because someone's going to make the best choice for them according to where they are at in their journey and in their process. And to your surprise, you may actually be further ahead of those people in some ways that they don't have the tools to be able to connect with you, to support you as a partner. It may not even be the rejection that you think. It may actually be a high level of protection, because you may be absolutely amazing in so many ways, but this person cannot support you in who you are and where you are in your love life. And they have to choose a partner that's going to be best equipped for them. And it's not even personal. It's just about compatibility and pairing. But if you deeply internalize every experience, every situation, and you have a hard time. Sometimes I have clients where they go through a situation, maybe it was just a couple of days, a couple of conversations, maybe it was a couple of months, but they allow that one experience to knock them down for so long. It could be months, it could be years. I have clients who have a hard time getting over breakups. One thing that you mentioned was that pain point has to exceed like where they're currently at. A lot of times when women come to me for coaching or to work with me, they're coming out of a breakup, or they experienced a really bad breakup that really is just like that breaking point. Like, they feel like they hit rock bottom in their love life, and that's when they finally decide to do something different. You don't have to wait until you hit rock bottom to make a decision to take more control and be more proactive. But that's often the reaction of like, enough is enough, right? But not being able to bounce back from those breakups or those disappointments or a bad date or someone that's not ready to commit or whatever those things are, and you're unable to regulate your emotions, regulate your thoughts and your beliefs about yourself or about relationships or any of that, and continue to move forward and develop a healthy relationship and develop a healthy relationship with relationships and love, so you're not allowing yourself to just like, I'm never doing this again, throw it all away. It's not like, no, like that's not healthy either. So I just love everything that you're talking about because it's so important. It's so important in order to have a healthy relationship with ourselves.
Yes. Preach, Zara. I really appreciate that because you're like, you're really speaking to the thing that we actually started with, which is the pushing through thing, like that, the false dichotomy of either we like have no emotions and we just push through, or we fall so deep, like you just, why, you know, the woe is me, right? Like where we just get lost in the sea of our emotions. And here is this other option. It's this option where we actually get to be with the hurt part of ourselves. Mm. We get to bring that compassion. We get to sit with ourselves. And by the way, the thing you talk about, putting the notes in your phone, so beautiful. There's a whole practice called journal speak for people with chronic pain, because people with chronic pain often push their emotions down and they get caught inside them, and that turns into pain, right? And the practice is writing it out and writing it out, like saying the stuff you would never say out loud. Like you just put it all down, right? Nicole Sachs, who talks about this, talks about like the first time she did it, she talked about wishing she had never become a mother. Mm. Like really just saying the things that you would, which aren't even true. You right. know what I mean? It's just right. the stuff that, that's the thing, the thoughts that come up in us, they're not even true. They're just things they're just we thoughts. Think, right? But right. but it, but like really that beautiful intuition you had to just get it out. And then we can work with it. We can edit it. We can delete it.
Right.
We can write back to it and say, here's the other side of the story that I wasn't thinking about. But we've actually brought ourselves into presence with what is here without being it, without being subsumed by that story.
I love
and
that.
Then we open up the capacity for choice and action and what thoughts do we want to have. And so we can both empower ourselves with choice while still honoring the reality of what is coming up inside us. And in fact, that is really the only way that we can move forward with our whole healthy self.
Amazing. Amazing. I have so much to say, and I feel like I can just keep this conversation going on forever. I definitely want to have you back on the podcast because I feel like this is a conversation that we could just keep going.
You're
so educated, just well informed about all of this, and just amazing at the work that you do. And it's important work. It's important. The stress management, the nervous system regulation, developing healthy habits. I do have one more question before we wrap this up. When it comes to this work, I think sometimes it can be viewed as a privilege or a luxury to be able to slow down and take that time to self-prioritize or to practice self-care or to work on yourself, that for those who may be in more of a survival mode state, maybe it's because of finances or time or lifestyle of those things, they may not see that it is available or accessible to them to be able, maybe they are telling themselves a story of like, well, I can't afford to get help, or maybe they don't have access to certain people or certain things. And so they feel very limited in their ability and they really have that keep pushing type of mindset. Or maybe they grew up in a home life or situation that wasn't emotionally available or didn't have the tools. We often didn't come from parents or households that were able to nurture us in this type of way. So the idea of not continuing to move forward or push through, or being able to just, like I said, self-prioritize and self-care in a type of way. It may be viewed as a luxury or a nice to have, but that's not practical. That's not real for me or my life. So I have too many things to do. I have too much going on, or whatever those stories are. What advice would you give to those people in that circumstance so that they can hone in and ground into the importance of that for their long-term health benefits?
Yeah, that's such a great question, Zara. So there's a quote from the Dalai Lama. He says, "I have so much to do today, I'm going to have to meditate twice as long."
I've heard that quote.
And I really love that, because we have this perception, and I say we because I fall into this trap all the time, that that time and effort are like linear and equal, which is to say, I have to just keep efforting, because the more I effort, the farther I will get. And that's just basically crap, right? We can work so hard, but if we're doing it the same unhelpful way, the same self-sabotaging way, we're wasting our time, because we're going to end up right back where we started. And that's not getting us anywhere.
Right.
And so it's scary to step out of that linear fantasy, because guess what? It's not linear. And that's true for health. It's true for money. That's true for our jobs. Like you said, how we do one thing is how we do everything. It feels linear. And by the way, one of the things that our brain does when we're activated and in a stress response, it pays attention to three things. It pays attention to our body, like, am I safe? Am I being bitten? Am I being attacked? To our environment, what are the threats outside me? And time. Do I have enough time? So that urgency is actually part of the stress response. That feeling like there is no time. And I really can fall victim to that. So I have a lot of empathy and compassion, because I have to do that with myself, which is this reminder that I can push to where I think we should be. But if I do that without putting the work in to get there the way I need to be, then I'm not going to have the outcome that I want to have.
Right.
And so I don't think this is luxury. I think this is strategy, and that we can all benefit from working smarter instead of working harder.
I love it. I love it. Thank you so much, Meredith, for coming to the podcast. Definitely will have to bring you back on. You are just a wealth of knowledge, and I just feel just the authenticity and just the genuineness when you speak, and your energy, and just like your desire to truly want to help people to grow in this area of their life. Please let the listeners know how they can find out more about you. I'll be sure to link your information in the show notes of this episode, but how they can learn more about you and how you can support them in their journey of healthy habits and nervous system regulation, just empowering them in their life when it comes to stress management.
Thank you so much, Zara. This has been such a fun conversation. I would love to come back. Folks can find me on Instagram at Inner Compass Health, Inner INNER, Compass Health. Or they can email me, meredith@innercompasshealth.com. And my website is www.innercompasshealth.com. And I am working with clients right now in a one-on-one fashion. I have a few spaces for more one-on-one clients. We enter into a 90-day container. We set goals. And then weekly, we meet to work through those goals, to bring that experimental mindset, to bring that awareness and that compassion, and to create incremental change, because that's how change is sustainable. So if folks are feeling stressed out, overwhelmed, and they feel like that's really getting in the way of their dating life, then come reach out, shoot me a DM. I'd love to talk to you.
I love it. I love it. Thank you so much, Meredith, for coming onto this episode. And for those of you who are listening, make sure that you go to the show notes to find out more about this episode, how you can be supported in this area, and to also get into contact with Meredith so she can help you in your journey as well. Thank you so much for listening. You guys have a wonderful, wonderful week. If you've been attracting the same experiences over and over again, feeling stuck in your love life and uncertain about what steps to take, or you simply want specific steps so that you can start to transform your love life today and attract better partners, then a 90-minute courtship loop session is for you.
Hi, my name is Zara J. I'm the founder of Captivating Courtship, the Captivating Courtship Coach Success Process, and the 8 Love Loop Relationship Patterns. I use a combination of my natural gifts to read relationship patterns, psychology, spirituality, and matchmaking techniques to provide you with deeper insight and tools to transform your relationship patterns, get back to who you are, and attract unlimited love. One way that I help you with this is through uncovering your courtship loops. Courtship loops are the blind spots and the links between your dating and relationship experiences that reveal the deeper story and connection to your love blocks. It's my intuitive process to help you bring clarity and guide you with specific steps on how you can change your love life right now. When you get clear on your blind spots, you will have the confidence and a roadmap on where you need to stop shrinking and settling so that you can elevate your expectations, set bolder boundaries, and develop unshakable self-worth to have the love you deserve. In this 90-minute session, you will be guided through the courtship loop process to uncover your unique relationship and courtship patterns and have an intimate look at how you can have more ease and flow to attract more enjoyable relationship experiences specific to your journey to love. You will walk away with a simple plan of action specific to you to help you navigate your love life for the next 6 months. This is a limited time offer with only 3 spots open every week to book a private courtship loop session. To secure your session today, go to the link in the show notes.